Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Happy Tuesday. Thanks for joining us, whether you're listening or watching. We're going to get to our 7-7 top headline. So Baylor rolls the Zags from the national championship 86-70. This win marks the first men's basketball title for the Bears in the history of the program. Baylor absolutely spoiling Gonzaga's perfect season. Kev, we wanted this game but did not expect the way this was going to go down.
This was incredible. This was absolutely incredible. We talked about this yesterday, the one versus two and delivering on that promise. But any way this game went, I thought it was going to be this. If Gonzaga rolled, cool, great. Like, maybe they are the greatest team of all time. A close game, you can never go wrong. I think this might have been the most fascinating one, though. Baylor answering the call, spoiling the perfect season, and just playing a phenomenal game.
Yes, phenomenal to say the least. How about Baylor's Jared Butler winning the most outstanding player, while Drew Timmy and Jalen Suggs were the favorites to win this award yesterday? Butler steals the show, 22 points, 3 boards, 7 assists, great value at plus 600 if you got Butler yesterday in this most outstanding player market.
You know, the interesting thing for Jared Butler is a little bit of history there. You love to have yourself connected to a guy like Carmelo Anthony, whose collegiate career, even the one, though just the one season, is always thought of highly. First player since Melo in 2003 to put up 20-plus points and 7-plus assists in the national championship game. Incredible stuff there from Butler.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about this game in the next segment. So let's just continue with our headlines to the NFL. QB update. New York Jets trade Sam Darnold to the Carolina Panthers for 3 draft picks. A 6th-rounder in 2021. Later this month, of course, we're going to have that draft. Then a 2nd-rounder and 4th-rounder in 2022. Jets already hold the number 2 overall pick in this year's draft. Now they can grab the number 6 spot as well. So I feel in the upcoming years, the Jets may not be anymore the poor Jets.
We'll see how things go with the second pick. Ultimately, though, the last time, right, you know, things with Darnold didn't work out so well when they drafted a quarterback as highly as they did with Sam. They netted at least a second-round pick and then a couple of additional add-ons, which is good enough. At one point, people thought maybe they could get a first. That clearly never materialized, but the Panthers now become the real fascinating team with this decision.
Yeah, another topic we'll talk about later in the show. Let's go to the field. Padres shortstop Fernando Tatis suffers a partial shoulder dislocation on a big swing in the 3rd inning against the Giants. Padres went on to lose the game 3-2. Tatis could face season-ending surgery.
This is so disappointing. Fernando Tatis felt like he might become baseball's one true superstar, a must-see player. You tune in each and every night to see what he is going to bring to the plate, bring to the field, has the swag, and this happens immediately. I mean, we could hardly get out of the first weekend before we lose the brightest star in the game. Just incredibly cruel. You hope it isn't season ending. And of course, this matters a ton for those that are invested, not only in the MVP market, but for San Diego Padres futures, win totals, divisions, and all of these different wagers.
And we want to welcome in our radio audience. You're listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid. It's on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Thanks for joining us this morning. Continuing with our 7-7 top headlines, it's also Kev Masters Week. Looking at the odds board on the Vandal Sports, we'll get Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, co-favorites of plus 950 right now, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas at 11-1, John Rahm rounding out that top five, 12-1. But all around, we're going to be talking about this throughout the week.
The Masters is here. It is obviously a big deal. We usually will give you some golf talk on a Wednesday. We're going to have to acknowledge this throughout and even beyond the previews because it's the Masters. Without a shadow of a doubt, to me, Bryson DeChambeau is the most interesting thing when we get underway. Now, joint favorites with Dustin Johnson at plus 950 to win the Masters. I cannot wait to watch this play out.
Me as well. All right, let's switch it back to the court. North Carolina has promoted longtime assistant Hubert Davis to replace Roy Williams as the Tar Heels' new head basketball coach. Davis has been the assistant coach under Williams for the past 9 seasons. Davis played at UNC from 1980 to 1992 before being a first-round NBA draft pick by the Knicks. He spent 12 seasons in the NBA with 6 organizations. UNC has a history, though, Kev, of promoting within the organization, so no surprise they went with a longtime assistant here.
Ultimately, for Hubert Davis, this is obviously a great opportunity to be coaching for the UNC Tar Heels, but this is not going to be an easy task. Their last couple of seasons not hitting on heights that they are typically used to, but people around this program seem to be very optimistic about what he is going to bring to Chapel Hill. Exciting stuff for UNC.
Yes, it is. And staying on the court, but in the NBA, we have the Nets win a New York rivalry game against the Knicks, 114-112. Despite James Harden's exit, Kyrie Irving posted 40 points in that game, was assisted by Joe Harris and Jeff Green.
Yeah, for Kyrie, dropping a 40 ball is always exciting. He always takes those games versus the Knicks very personal. You can tell he always wants to show out when he's playing against the Knicks. But it's hard for the Harden thing not to be the story. Again, Kevin Durant doesn't play. Oh, he's going to play. Yeah, no, he's not. He doesn't play. And then Harden tries to play and gets the re-injury there. It's big stuff right now for Brooklyn. They need their health.
Yes, it is. At some point this season, I hope we see all three of them back on the court. Come up next, we're going to talk about the national championship game. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, Kev, so the national championship game, of course, was last night. Bears beat Gonzaga 86-70 to win this. I was not expecting this game to go this way, but off the bat, I just have to say, you had the Bears winning it all in your bracket, correct?
Oh, yeah, I did. I certainly did, which was
I'll let you brag
exciting stuff.
Here.
You love, you know, buying all in on the brackets. I didn't think that was going to happen. I don't have a great history of bracket success, but yet, here we are, the Sports Grid Bracket Challenge champion, which I believe gives me ultimate bragging rights, at least until next March, and I guess the college basketball expert of the network. That's how that works, right? I'm now the college basketball expert of the network, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, I had Illinois, so it couldn't get worse for me. But yeah, you having, of course, the Baylor Bears was great. But as for the Zags this morning, they're waking up as the first team since – they're not, excuse me, waking up as the first team since 1976 to go undefeated. So that's very unfortunate for them. In fact, they had their perfect season completely spoiled, which was something a lot of people thought could not happen, considering I had Baylor plus 4.5 as my dog of the day. And if you really want to see some interesting things, go to that post and read the comments underneath. But Gonzaga now 31-1. They shot 51% but finished with the season low of 70 points after averaging a national best 91.6 points. So Gonzaga was down by 19 points in that first half. I thought, all right, I might just go to bed at this point, which I ended up doing. But Gonzaga just made 5 of 17 three-pointers, their lowest total of the 6 NCAA tournament games that they played in. All around, what happened to the Zags? Why did they fall apart?
Yeah, I think on the offensive end, they looked rattled, which was jarring to me because that never ever happened to this team. Obviously, they had defensive issues in the first half. Baylor's shot making was phenomenal, but the Gonzaga offense for that first half just didn't look like themselves. And I should say probably throughout the first half of the first half, they didn't look like themselves. They somehow still magically ended up just a basket shy of their team points prop for the first half of 38.5, only ending then on 37. But they couldn't even get shots up. It was turnovers each and every time down the floor. You really, the intensity level from these two squads, just far different. Baylor dominating the offensive glass early and often, and Gonzaga just not having answers. I also think, Aaron, the two quick fouls, the charge and then the reach-in that went against Jalen Suggs, I don't think either call questionable, either call really saying, oh, that's unfair. I think they were both correct calls. That also unsettled Gonzaga, but more importantly, he was so important, everything that they were doing. They just found no rhythm for a lot of that first half, and then they had to bring Jalen Suggs back in pretty early into the first half, because at that point, it was, he's either going to foul out, or we're going to leave him on the bench, and this will never, ever, ever be a competitive game.
Yeah, and the Bears built that 45-20 lead against UCLA at one point. And then, of course, in this game, they're coming up with 19 points, but before the half, able to bring it within 10 points. It seemed that that was kind of their attack plan, to get in, get out, and try to, you know, score as many points in that first half, because it's going to rattle them, and that's exactly what they did in this game.
And I think you go through some of the first half shooting numbers for Baylor, a perfect 50% from the floor on 19 of 38 shooting, and from beyond the arc, they knocked down 7 of their 12 attempts from beyond the arc, good enough for 58%, 58.3 to be exact, and hauled in 9 offensive rebounds. Again, Baylor on the offensive side of the floor, it's, you almost struggle to just, you know, which one do you want to give them more credit for? Because holding Gonzaga to 37 in the first half is remarkable. They had touched at least 43 in all of the first halves. But getting to 47 points and doing it, you know, with every single different kind of facet of the game. Again, the three-point shooting, sensational. They were finishing around the cup. And the few rare misses that they had, Aaron, they just secured the offensive rebound and got themselves an extra possession. Yeah. Baylor looked like the unstoppable, unbeaten force when this game was getting started.
And a lot of people thought that Gonzaga was going to shake off the rust with that game against UCLA. But then, like you said, they didn't shoot well from beyond the three-point line. And then you have, even from the free throw line, 15 of 21. It just seems like, even if, let's say, they did have that issue at the beginning with Jalen Suggs and whatnot, they had the two fouls, why wasn't Drew Timmy or other players able to step up the way that that team needed?
Yeah, I think it was because Baylor's defense was smothering them. And, you know, Corey Kispert didn't have a banner tournament, certainly didn't have a banner national championship game. Timmy was his usual efficient self, 12 points on 5 of 7 shooting, but the 5 turnovers was not typical for him. And he was struggling to get the basketball, is what I noticed early and often. Like, they just weren't letting him get it. And even if he did, he was not comfortable when he had it. One of the interesting things is that 15 of 21 night at the line, well, Gonzaga went and made 12 of their first 13 free throws. They were 12 of 13 from the line in the first half. Compared that to Baylor's 2 for 2 from the line. And I would tell you, Aaron, that those free throws, and not that it was wrong. Again, Baylor, you know, was a little sloppy on that end in trying to foul maybe a little too much, maybe a little too aggressive, letting Gonzaga get in the bonus. But those free throws is really what kept Gonzaga afloat. Part of it is definitely because I was invested in Baylor throughout the brackets that I was bothered by this. I openly admit that. But I was bothered by the timeline last night, having people parade around how incredible it is that Gonzaga was only down 10. We can't do, just every single time a team plays bad, we can't go, oh, they're only down X. Like, I understood it when Gonzaga played UCLA, and UCLA scored 44 and we're still losing at the break, okay? I understand that. But to be like, wow, Gonzaga's only down 10, like, yeah, they're down double digits to the other best team in the country. This is not a good spot for them to be in. There was a moment in the second half where they had it below single digits, and it immediately jumped back up to 15, and Baylor never looked back.
I felt like people just were so high on Gonzaga this entire even game, because you'd see people be like, okay, the money line's at this before the break, or excuse me, before, yeah, the, in between the halves, they were just like, the money line is at plus 180 here. Like, everybody hammer this. And then, of course, Baylor comes out. Like you said, they're one of the best teams. So for people to kind of just, the whole time I just felt like I kept seeing tweets and tweets like, Gonzaga's going to come back. Yeah. back. But you made a great point that they were just not in a great spot to be able to do that, especially against a team like Baylor.
And I'm not, by the way, suggesting that, again, I was sat there as someone backing Baylor, like, feet up, ha ha ha, this is so easy. No, because you respect what Gonzaga can do. Their offensive ceiling is the best that college basketball had to offer. And if they had snapped out of it, they could have easily hung 50 in the second half. That's what they did when they played West Virginia early in the season. We're down at the break and put up 53 second half points. When they were down to BYU in their conference title game and put up 47 in the second half. But this Baylor team, and this is what we talked about, and I know we'll expand on this a little bit more in the next segment, but clearly this Baylor team was their equal. The perception of these two squads when the season started and before Baylor had their COVID shutdown in February is that they were on the same level. Maybe a slight edge of Gonzaga, but they were on even footing. Clearly, that was the case. When you leave this game, this was not Gonzaga then Baylor. No. It was Gonzaga and Baylor, and the end result was Baylor was the best team in the country.
Yes, it was. Obviously, a very devastating loss for Gonzaga. Stay with us here on the R-Line. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Early Line right here on SportsGrid, SportsGrid Radio, Sirius XM Channel 204, as we react to the national championship game between Baylor and Gonzaga, an 86-70 thrashing, dominant victory at the minimum for the Baylor Bears over Gonzaga, and it leaves us wondering where it leaves these teams in the all-time pantheon of college basketball. Because what was hanging in the balance for Gonzaga, assuredly for some, was if this result led to them being 32-0 as opposed to what they will finish at, which is 31-1, well, it was going to be a lot of folks claiming Gonzaga to be the best college basketball team in the history of the sport. And when you look at the advanced metrics, the fact that Jalen Suggs is a top five pick, and there were three other, maybe even four other pros on this roster, you could see how people would have that excitement level. And in the Gonzaga, the positive about this year's group is you couldn't hold the WCC against them, even if it was a down year for the WCC. They beat every single one of those teams by double digits, and what they did out of conference and throughout this tournament, dominating a Kansas, dominating a Creighton during the tournament, Kansas early season, Virginia, Iowa, they had the reps. The USC performance is one of the three best that we had seen any team put forward in this tournament. But this game didn't land that way. Does that erase everything Gonzaga did? Well, it certainly means they cannot be the greatest team of all time. You can't be the greatest team of all time without a national championship, right? You can't. It's the same thing with the 73-9 Warriors. They can't be the greatest team of all time. They can thank LeBron James for that. Where does this Gonzaga team land? Well, somewhere behind this Baylor team that I think has a pretty similar argument in terms of ranking high on these all-time spots within this conversation. 28-2 in a tremendous Big 12, and the two losses came, one, the second game after a three-week COVID pause in February, and then still clearly not themselves and were bounced in the Big 12 conference tournament by a good Oklahoma State team. Some could wonder, if not for the February pause, obviously, had there been no COVID whatsoever, these teams would have met during the regular season, so one of them would have not been able to claim to be unbeaten coming into this game. But if you just took away that February pause, what if Baylor also would have came in here unbeaten? Would have been 29-0 entering this game and would have left 30-0. Well, they very well could have claimed to be the greatest team of all time. And I think for me, and I know that I don't go back as far as some with the all-time great teams, but Baylor is, I know for a fact, one of the best that I've seen. Their guards, well, it's just obvious. The Jared Butler, Davion Mitchell backcourt is tremendous. A couple of pros, a couple of first-round picks. The Davion Mitchell hype is going to get him in the lottery. I don't doubt that for a second. Maceo Teague, a sniper who continually hit big shots for this team and did in this game, a quiet 19 points in big shot after big shot. And even the bigs stepped up. Mark Vital and his 8 offensive rebounds were crucial to this result. Flo Thamba, on name alone, again, one of the best names I've ever seen in college basketball, makes him a key part to this Baylor Bears team. When we take away the who Baylor is and what Baylor brought to the table, I'll always remember them as one of the best teams that I've ever seen. And there's no doubt about that in my mind. Is Aaron with us? Is Aaron ready to roll? Yes, no, maybe. Aaron, good to go?
Am I good to go? Am I live now?
Yeah, you're rocking with us, Aaron. I mean, I'm just talking here. A little bit about just this Baylor team and where they rank in the all-time rankings. Because to me, again, I don't go back to the 90s and the Duke squads and all these different things, but that's an all-time group in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like the argument with Baylor is the COVID break and would they have been undefeated. Obviously, if Gonzaga had, remained undefeated, the storyline would be huge for them and people would remember them. But unfortunately, I feel that people only really remember the championship games in a way because that's the most exciting, being Baylor's obviously first in program history. Everybody's going to remember this team. Even if they have lost every single game before it, Baylor still would be the huge storyline. So unfortunately, I think a lot of these teams, it comes down to the championship game. Even though you went undefeated against all those teams and we were making the argument against Gonzaga, they were playing some not great teams, and clearly when they played a top team like Baylor, which we didn't get that first matchup of course because of COVID, they fell short, and they fell short by a lot. This wasn't like a competitive game where it was between 1 and 2 points. I mean, they were blown out in this game, and that's something people are going to remember, and unfortunately for those players, that's something that's probably going to haunt them for a really, really long time.
Yeah, it's a good point. Gonzaga never led at any point in this game. Yeah, I know this game was late for people, but some might have been able to shut this thing off at the under 16 timeout when the score was 11-1. I mean, they were hardly able to get it back to single digits really at any point in this game. After the under 16, again, it was at, 15-59 is when it went 11-1. How many minutes of the remaining 36 did Gonzaga play while not trailing by double digits? Two minutes? They were ran off the court here by Baylor. And who they are, and again, deservedly so, people probably believed in this game longer than they would have had any other team been down by this margin. But as Aaron is saying here, it really wasn't that close. Baylor won the second half. They won the second. Like, they grew their lead. Like, the comeback was not on. It just wasn't.
Do you think that maybe since they were so used to winning by double digits, they had that confidence, many people just thought they were going to come in and run over Baylor, that they were just so stunned that at that point after, you know, they're going into the break, they're thinking, oh, we're 10 points, don't worry about it, we'll be fine. And then they just weren't expecting a team to come out and be as hot as the Baylor Bears were in that first half.
I think there is something to the idea that you never want to make the argument the UCLA game hurt them. But the manner in which it happened, it might have. The UCLA game
You think it would light a fire under them. You would expect that more so than what happened in this game.
Not always. Not at that. You're walking on water with a game like that. Like, oh, we didn't play that great. Look at this shot. All of a sudden, and this was something you noticed, the conversation went from Gonzaga's the best team I've seen, Gonzaga's an all-time great team, to they're a team of destiny. Well, hold on a minute now. Teams of destiny typically is what we say about someone that isn't just the best team. Like, ultimately, right, when the Lakers won the NBA championship, they weren't a team of destiny. They're the best team in the NBA. It was all of a sudden now, it was like, oh, Gonzaga is just going to be lifted by the basketball gods to the podium to collect their trophy. That's not how this works. And you could tell, and you heard some of the post-game comments from Baylor players on social media. We were underdogs. We haven't been underdogs in a long time. If they're supposed to be the best team ever, well, then what are we? They wanted this matchup. They wanted this matchup. They were hungry for this game. Better than us. Better than us. Has anyone not seen what we've been doing? And I think Gonzaga might have been like, oh, we can't be touched. Worst case scenario, Suggs will just hit another 40-foot half-court buzzer beater. Nobody can hang with us.
Yeah.
I do somewhat subscribe to the theory. It's not the reason Gonzaga lost, but I do somewhat believe there is something to the idea that the fashion in which the UCLA game ended probably made them think they were untouchable, and they were not.
That's so interesting, Kev. Sorry, guys, as we try to work on this issue in my ear right now. That's so interesting to me because I thought the opposite. I thought with UCLA, obviously, in that game, I was like, this is going to be, okay, we cannot play like this. We cannot let anybody take a lead. We're going to come out hot. We're going to try our best. Whereas you were taking it as they're going to walk on water, obviously, with Jalen Suggs and things of that nature. So it's just so interesting how we both took different takeaways from that, even though, obviously, it was a huge play by Jalen Suggs. The 2 fouls in the beginning didn't help him. But why don't we switch it over to the most outstanding player market? Because, obviously, this was something we've been talking about in the past couple of weeks. And you'd advise people, even before that UCLA game, don't take somebody on UCLA. So we were a little surprised. Obviously, Drew Timmy. He was one of the favorites at plus 115 with Jalen Suggs yesterday. Then you had Davion Mitchell plus 450, Jared Butler plus 600. Obviously, Butler getting that 22 points, cashed in on 4 3-pointers, more than any player on either team from behind the arc. And obviously, historic win for them. So were you surprised that he won this, or did you think he was pretty deserving?
No, I actually do think that Butler was deserving. We broke down the most outstanding player market at great length here on the early line. And the starting point for us when we got to the Sweet 16 was that Davion Mitchell was undervalued. Well, we were proven to be correct because he went from double the price on Jared Butler to moving in front of him before this game. But Jared Butler put up such a good performance against Houston that with another great performance, he had the ability to win this. He was excellent in this game. We'll talk more about this and the rest of the college basketball season next on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Lines. Right now, the FanDuel Sportsbook, even though we had the national championship game last night, we already have odds for the 2022 season. So Gonzaga is the favorite at plus 900 right now, also tied with Michigan at plus 900. Then we have Baylor 12-1. Villanova also is at 12-1, which is so interesting considering their season this season. And then we have Florida State 14-1, Duke 15-1, Kentucky 15-1, UCLA also up there at 15-1. I'm sure those odds are pretty high just considering how they just played against Gonzaga. And then Ohio State at 16-1. Kev, no surprise that Gonzaga is still one of the favorites to win it next year with Baylor up there, too.
Yeah, and that's typically what we see when they post these immediate futures. Before we dive into this, because there are a couple of things that jump out to me for next year, I'd love to talk about this year's futures market. And primarily when we had the market posted, when the bracket was set, all the way up until we crowned Baylor as our national champion, because I think there really were two different approaches for people that jumped in this futures market. There were those that backed Gonzaga, and if you did that, they were really the only team that which you could back. And then, Aaron, I think there are those who were able to grab a couple of teams and hoping that anybody but Gonzaga would be the national champions.
And do you think, looking at this market, that we're basing a lot of this, we know this is an instant reaction, everything that happened, but even seeing a UCLA up at 15-1, that's something that you usually don't see before the season. Do you think those odds will actually lessen at some point so you might find better value throughout the upcoming months?
Yeah, I definitely think that is the case. When you look at what we still have to figure out for next year, I mean, we always have a lot of things that are going to happen, but there are so many players in the transfer portal. It is almost impossible to know who is going to be on these rosters. There are multiple top 10 players that are currently not committed to teams, including who a lot of people believe is the number one player in Chet Holmgren. Some think he might go to Gonzaga, which is certainly viable. And I would argue to you, Aaron, that one of the biggest things for this Gonzaga team is how important the success of Jalen Suggs is. Because yep. Gonzaga now is a lot more than the team that dominates the WCC, and then we go, they played nobody, and then they lose at some point in the tournament. Gonzaga is a national powerhouse in college basketball. Duke, Kentucky, Gonzaga, UNC. That's the reality. And yes, you can argue from now moving on, of course not all time, but from now moving on, that Gonzaga might be the national powerhouse when it comes to college basketball. And you'll be able to make that argument if they start to land recruits like they did Jalen Suggs. People probably don't know this because it is so stunning, but Jalen Suggs is the first ever five-star recruit that Mark Few brought to Gonzaga. So yeah, this team that's been this good for this long, he never had a five-star recruit. And the result of him getting just one was a 31-0 start to the season, dominating throughout, and being a game away from the first unbeaten season in almost 40 years. So if you're, and by the way, not only just that, but I would say helping Jalen Suggs secure his position inside the top three, and really probably gave Suggs as the best player more legs than it would have had he gone anywhere else in the country, because we know people love the tournament. People will at times overreact to the tournament and say to themselves, you know what, I absolutely think that if Suggs can win the national championship, then I would want him as my number one pick because he's a leader, he's a champion, and all of those things. So if you are a Chet Holmgren and you're deciding, you get to play in an open, efficient offense like Gonzaga. You know the worst case scenario is you're going to be like a two seed because Gonzaga is going to dominate in the WCC and will do their part to schedule very, very good opponents out of conference. And you if you play well enough, you can secure your draft spot somewhere inside the top five. I think that's one of the big things that happened here for Gonzaga, Aaron, and I think they are justified as the favorites when you look ahead to next season.
Do you think Michigan's justified to be the co-favorites there?
Yeah, if you look at Michigan. Now, so this is the other deal. So many people can return. Everyone can return, actually. This year doesn't count towards eligibility. So if any of these teams really wanted to run back, they can. We don't know who's going to be back for Michigan. Franz Wagner's got to be gone. But realistically, they have multiple top 10 recruits, and they have four players inside the top 50, at least according to how ESPN is ranking next year's freshman class. So for Juwan Howard, with now a season under the belt, a tremendous group incoming, how do you not get excited about what he's going to be able to do next year with a little bit more time underneath his belt?
Yeah, and that's so interesting, Kev. So let's switch it over to the draft then. Obviously, we think Cade Cunningham is going to go first. Who else do you think is going to come out of this class and be great for one of these NBA teams?
Yeah, so Cade Cunningham, again, I think really does have a big leg up when it comes to being the first overall pick. I will be very interested to see what the odds look like when those are released, because Suggs's tenure at Gonzaga, I think, have some people pushing him up the board. And you at home, perhaps, watch Cade, watch Suggs, say that's ridiculous. One of them is a 6'9" point guard. While Suggs is excellent, he's not Cade Cunningham. But it doesn't stop GMs from making mistakes. Again, Luka Doncic was obviously the best player in that class. I don't know what the Phoenix Suns were doing. So Suggs will be live. And what also I think could make a guy like Evan Mobley live in a way that, you know, typically maybe wouldn't be the case is the fact that he is a big. And you should not be drafting for need with the first overall pick. If you have the first overall pick, that means you're not very good. And if you're a team that just somehow lucked out in the lottery, well, again, then you should be just taking the best player that's available to you. But, again, NBA teams don't always do what we think, you know, the smartest decision is. So I think Evan Mobley as well could be live. To me, Aaron, there is it's Cade, and this is, again, not even about in terms of the player, in terms of what the market probably looks like. Cade, there'll be a drop-off, and then you would book Suggs and Mobley at the same price to be the first overall pick. But I think there's a world in which all three could be live to find themselves called first on that night.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook is 70-1 to win, obviously, the national championship next year. Granted, we think that Cade Cunningham is going to go as the first projected pick. But why don't we just overall talk about the bracket and things that surprised us the most? I think one of them would obviously be Illinois going out early and the Big Ten just overall being terrible for this tournament. And the Wolverines actually being one of those number one picks that was surprising, of course, until they went down.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're Michigan, right, when you consider the quality of game UCLA gave the Zags and then what Baylor did, a part of you has to think, well, we could have done that as well. We could have been playing in the title game. We maybe could have beat a Baylor. We could have given them a better game. So Michigan will be frustrated by that. The Big Ten will be frustrated, of course, by their tournament. You talk about takeaways and lessons, and I started to talk about this a couple of moments ago, but the way people attack this futures market here for the NCAA tournament, and if you backed Gonzaga at that 2-1 price that Aaron and I had discussed before the tournament, well, you beat the number. Did you beat the preseason 7-1, 8-1, 9-1? No. No. But you beat the minus 210 that they were in the title game. You opened yourself up to a legitimate hedge opportunity if you weren't comfortable in Gonzaga winning this game. And the worst case scenario, if you bought them at 2-1, is you got them at the best number that they were at any point then throughout the tournament. And instead of paying a minus 210 or laying 4.5 points like others did, it's still what was going to be then a minus 110 price on the spread. Well, you had them at 2-1. You had a better number than your counterparts. So you can be happy enough with that. The other strategy, Aaron, that we talked about on the show when it comes to playing this futures market, and again, Gonzaga was booked in such a way that you couldn't grab Gonzaga in multiple teams. But if you liked anybody else, you could grab multiple teams. And this is something that I have now in consecutive tournaments. Again, maybe it's fool's gold. You never know. I don't have this 10-year track record of being able to do this. But maybe there is something to the notion of trying to grab a half of the bracket, not just a specific region, but a half of a bracket. And if you believe enough in, say, three teams, again, the numbers are gaudy enough, they're big enough to where you could grab three of those teams and just say, I'm going to get to the title game. There is no way one of these three teams isn't in the title game. You could get it in such a way that if you ultimately really, really, really wanted to hedge on the title game, you might just have that opportunity. And the worst case scenario then again is you'll have a better number probably than what the money line would be. The three teams that we had talked about was grabbing Baylor, Illinois, and Houston. And yeah, none of those picks are wildly out there on a limb. A one, mm-hmm. and a two. But guess what? If you had those three tickets, you were guaranteed to be in the national championship game by the time Baylor met Houston. So there is value in playing it that way. And mm-hmm. it's going to be a way I'll look to continue to play these tournament futures year in and year out.
And what's interesting, at least the biggest lesson I think I learned, is that multiple number one seeds could go to the national championship game. I was only having Illinois make it as one of the number one seeds into the Final Four, obviously, because I was going with all the underdogs. But I even felt when I was picking the underdogs, a lot of teams were either truly upsetting them or just being surprising. I mean, you think of the Pac-12. You have Oregon, USC was in there. They were moving up. UCLA, who would have thought that they would have came out the way they did coming in that first four? There's just so much unpredictability, I feel, in this bracket that it's so hard to even with those strategies of how we're going to play this, obviously you make a great point playing with one half, but it's just so wild to me how this shakes out. I'm not sure if it was the year off with the COVID or things of that nature, and maybe it'll be more predictable next year when we have, you know, a regular season and we're seeing different things than we did this, obviously, which is conference play. So I think for me the biggest takeaway would probably be that two number one seeds can make it. Don't always bet every single underdog, even though obviously UCLA made that run there. But I think the biggest surprise for me was definitely the Pac-12 out of all the conferences.
You know, that's a great point. You talk about the themes of this tournament, Gonzaga's domination, Baylor ultimately hoisting the trophy, and then it's what the Pac-12 did. I mean, it's crazy. And it wasn't just UCLA, but USC was excellent until they ran into the Zags. Oregon State went on a ridiculous run and hung all the way until the last with Houston. And all, it's just very, very impressive stuff. You're absolutely right to bring that up.
Yes, they were. All right, guys, coming up next, we're going to give you our Hero of the Night. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line of Marinville, and joined by my co-host Kevin Walsh. Now in the NBA last night, favorites went 4-3 straight up, but underdogs dominated 6-1 against the spread. Timberwolves, Mavs, and Cavs pulled upsets, while the Wizards, Knicks, and Rockets covered in straight up losses. Overs went 4-3. Kev, it's time for the Hero of the Night.
So as we transition to Hero of the Night, I have to admit that I was really, really rooting home last night's over. And I didn't even actually put action down on the full game over. But it would have been so fitting. Final college basketball game would have got over in the final minute with the bench players in. We didn't get there, though. We didn't get there. I wasn't going to force the issue and give this to somebody that wasn't deserving from that game. I mean, yeah, you could have given it to a Jared Butler, Davion Mitchell, Maceo Teague, sure. But we had a legitimate hero last night. And not even in the sense of like, oh, what a cover, what an over. This is just the more traditional sense of a hero of the night. How about Gary Trent Jr. of now the Toronto Raptors having a moment for this Raptors team going out there with 5 seconds remaining, grabbing the board as the Raptors trailed 101-100 to the Washington Wizards, takes it himself in transition, stop at the top of the key, lets it rip, and nothing but net as Gary Trent Jr. walks it off at the buzzer, 103-101. The Raptors win. It is their second in a row. It puts them a game off of the Chicago Bulls for one of those very valuable play-in spots. The Raptors need every win that they can get. And they got a big one last night because of a Gary Trent Jr. shot at the gun. A deserving, Aaron, hero of the night.
Yes, and Gary Trent Jr. ended with 16 points in that game, but very deserving hero of the night. And like you said, Toronto Raptors, they need every single win they can possibly get. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us, guys.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.